throughout the meeting and should not speak. Everyone should ensure their mobile telephones are either turned off or switched to silent. The use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio recorded except for the council is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system, so please ensure that your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. I remind councillors of their obligations under the Councillors' Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the meeting today. If you have any such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the table for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. Okay. You're all very welcome tonight on this Valentine's Day, so I'm sure some of you are to get away home early, so we'll try and get through this agenda as quickly as we can. Hopefully there's a bit of love in the air tonight. Okay. Any apologies? Okay. Declarations of interest. Okay. Item 3 is the action sheet arising from the SPNR meeting. So for accuracy. Page number 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5. Okay. Proposer and seconder. Councillor Burgess. Councillor Hyland. Any matters arising? Happy to proceed. Okay. Item number 4 is from Conrad McGilligan and Committee on the Administration Justice 2018 Report on Local Councils Obligations in the Irish Language, a framework for compliance. That's an item for noting, but Doreena is going to speak.
Thank you, Chair. Members, just drawing this report to your attention. Conrad McGilligan published a report which outlines each council's adherence to the framework, and you'll see that there are 5 distinct measures at 1.2. We have enclosed the full report in your pack for your information, but just really to draw your attention to 2 items within the report, and you'll see those are outlined in section 2.1. In relation to Measure 1, the report states that Newry, Mourne and Down District Council is the most compliant in terms of having a policy which provides for resolute action to promote the Irish language. And in overall conclusion, across all of those 5 measures with regard to our council is, although gaps remain in the provision, the council has shown a commitment to progressively realise their obligations under the ECRML. So we're just really asking for you to note that. We did bring this report to the Irish Language Working Group, and we're bringing it to the attention of this committee for noting.
Okay. Councillor Murray?
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. Yeah, we saw this at the working group, and just a thought, I didn't want to let it go past just without congratulating everybody. I suppose in Aileen and Gaeliga, Ursula Trasa and Louise and Molly when she was there, and Regina is, I suppose, the officer overseeing it. Whenever that working group was set up, the cross-party working group, it was very much to ensure that the Irish language strategy was being adhered to and was being followed and was being played out as best it can. And this report back from Conrad and Gaeliga was very reassuring to ourselves, to all councillors, to look at it and to be measured as the council is performing best across this study. So again, just to heap praise on Aileen and Gaeliga and everyone involved.
Okay, any more comments? Councillor Hen.
Professional document, and it does give you a lot of room to think about the future of the Irish language and how it can be successfully enhanced and advanced. But I'd also like to congratulate people who have worked hard within the council and those outside the council have done likewise. So, all around, thank you. Chair Meggett.
Mr. Horn.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And on the same thread, I suppose reading through the report, it's great to see that this council, even though on Measure 1, that it's the most compliant right across the north. The one thing that I do want to raise is that it points out in the report, I think page 54 or 55, and it talks about, you know, the online site being bilingual. And I think, you know, some of us councillors have got very, very sharp emails from members of the Irish speaking community right across the district on trying to improve that. So as much as it's absolute praise for the officers, the Irish language officers from Ushla and our team, it's, I hope, a report that can be built on going forward and that we can iron out some of them other issues. I also just want to raise that for councillors that do want to avail of Irish language training, we had an issue there last year where I worked closely with Irish language officers for a course that was starting up for staff. There was 5 free places on it, and at the last minute, an hour before the course started, there was an issue that councillors couldn't be on it with staff. So 3 places went without being filled, and when it went out to councillors, it was only myself that was there at the end, so the course couldn't be run. I would like to see if whoever's lucky enough to get back into this position after the elections, that there is training, whether it's with staff and councillors together, that councillors can avail of in the new council. But I want to congratulate just the same as the other 2 speakers, the Irish language team.
Councillor Enright.
Could I just add my second that basically, there's no obvious reason why staff and councillors can't learn a language together. There's nothing that would conflict between us in attempting to learn a language together. If anything, it would give suffer to people across the council, knowing that everyone was involved.
Okay, I'd echo those sentiments. I think it's very important that the opportunities are there for all of our members to potentially learn the language if they so wish. I think we'll look into that one. And again, I'd like to pass on the congratulations to Ursula and all the team for what's been a superb achievement. I know we don't get everything right, but sometimes when we do, I think we should recognise that and recognise the work that our staff put into making that happen, and the Irish Language Committee as well. So we move on to item number 5, which is the Local Development Plan Steering Group minutes. I think Andrew Hayes is going to. Andrew.
Thank you, Chair. That first item on the Local Development Plan is the minutes of the meeting from October, of the steering group, which were agreed at the meeting on the 11th of February, start this week, so those minutes are on for noting.
Any comments on that? Item 5, happy to move on. Item 6, I take it you're taking it as well, Andrew.
Thanks, Chair. The report that's before the committee is in respect of a revision for the Local Development Plan timetable. The purpose of the report is to consider a revised timetable for the preparation, production and adoption of the Local Development Plan. The timetable details the key stages, actions and indicative time frame in the plan preparation process. The current timetable was approved by the Council in July 17 and agreed by the Department for Infrastructure in October 17. And a summary of the current timetable was attached to Appendix 1. The timetable was a statutory requirement which requires to be kept up to date. And as such, there is a need to review and revise the timetable to reflect progress and projected timeframes. Following review, it is now considered necessary to revisit and revise the current timetable, and the revised timetable has been drafted for members' consideration and agreement. A summary of that revised timetable was attached to Appendix 2, and the revised timetable was considered and agreed at the Open Development Plan Steering Group meeting on the 11th of February. Members will be aware that the Council has completed the preferred options paper stage and work is currently progressing on the preparation of the next formal stage of the Local Development Plan, which is the Draft Plan Strategy. The current timetable refers to the preferred options paper being published by the end of March 2018. Some slippage in finalising the POP was experienced and it was not published until the 1st of June 2018. The current timetable indicates the publication of the draft plan strategy by the end of this March. Given slippage to date and as informed by experience and updated knowledge of the time, resources, logistics and overall processes involved in this new plan process, it will not be possible to publish the draft plan strategy by the end of that date, which was an indicative date that was informed by DFI guidance and has now proven to be unrealistic. As such, the current timetable requires to be revised. Informed by the POP process, preparatory work to date, and in monitoring and learning from the experiences of other councils, that are ahead of us in the plan process. We have reviewed our work programme for the draft plan strategy. On assessment of the work required, this stage is proving to be more complex, resource intensive and a lengthier process than envisaged at the outset of this new development plan process. The preparatory work for the draft plan strategy requires a number of work strands, and to assist the development plan team and support the evidence base, some of these work areas will require the commissioning of detailed studies. And these studies are essential in providing a robust evidence base which will help ensure that the draft plan strategy meets the soundness tests. This evidence will also inform the later local policies plan stage, so time spent now should help front load the later stage of the plan development. In addition to slippage in the timetable to date, the Department and the Planning Appeals Commission have now advised councils to programme at least a year for the independent examination process at both the draft plan strategy and the draft local policies plan stages. The completion of the POC stage presents a timely opportunity to consider progress to date and the next stages in the process. As one of the procedural tests of soundness is adherence to the agreed timetable, it is important to ensure that the timetable remains as up-to-date and as reasonably flexible as possible. As for the current timetable, any revised timetable requires to be approved by the Council prior to submission to the Department for its agreement. As I say, a revised timetable has been drafted and a summary is provided at Appendix 2. In respect to the next stage of the local development plan process, members will note that the indicative timeframe for the publication of the draft plan strategy is now the latter half of 2020. The revised timetable was considered and agreed at the local development plan steering group meeting on the 11th of February and recommended to this committee for its agreement. It is recommended this committee agrees the revised timetable and, subject to agreement and approval thereafter by the Council, agrees that the Planning Department progress the revised timetable with the Department for its agreement and subsequent publication. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew, for a very detailed analysis and update. Any comments, members? Okay. Can I take it from that? Do we need a proposer and seconder then? Councillor Dorn, Councillor Burgess. Okay, item 7 is a review of community planning structures. Jonathan's going to speak to this one.
Okay, Chairman, the paper has been circulated there, and what we are outlining, Chairman, is a proposal to the Council in terms of a new plan or new structure for the governance and community plans, Chairman. As you know, that obviously the community planning and partnership sits at a strategic level, but below that, there has been a series of thematic groups, Chairman. One of the challenges over the period since setting up these structures has been the thematic groups have identified quite a vast array of projects and initiatives. However, moving these forward in partnership have been challenging. The proposal, Chairman, moving forward, as detailed in the report, is that partnership would continue to function as currently constituted, with the chair rotating between the various partners. But at the thematic level, these would become much more project focused, Chairman, where they'll take the current list of priorities, prioritise those to a small number of projects that can be moved forward, and that those thematic groups, Chairman, would only meet probably twice, three times a year, chaired by an elected member as opposed to the previous arrangement, Chairman, with one member from each one elected member on each thematic group, Chairman. So those are the key recommendations, Chairman, that we would be asking the Council to adopt.
Okay. Any comments or questions, Councillor Shannon?
Chair, yeah. I fully appreciate and fully understand what's being asked. This is, and I fully agree. Especially with the idea of, you know, the number of projects that should be looked at going forward, because obviously if we set the bar too high and we have too many projects, we're not going to really be able to complete any because there'll be too much work to be done amongst all the partners. So I can fully see the logic in behind that and the rationale. The only thing I can't see the rationale behind is the reduction from 10 members to just one elected member sitting and chairing. Now, obviously, yes, one elected member chairing, but I don't see why we don't have an option that is fit to the party representatives forum, because I see that it has been circulated party representatives forum beforehand, But one of the options that wasn't presented, obviously, to party reps forum, from what I've seen from the report that went to there, was the option of having one member from each political grouping being a member of each of the thematic groups. Because obviously, I have full confidence in all my colleagues here in council to sit on those groups and the chair. However, there is different, I suppose, political aspects to this. So whenever you're talking about health, there's different political takes. And if you have one particular person, you know, that you're not obviously allowing for the balance then in the politics of it. So I'm just wondering, what was the rationale behind just removing it from 10 to 1? I can see, obviously, the cost side of things. I can see that, you know, you are reducing expenses and that, but just trying to get a feel for that.
I suppose, Chairman, it's really it's a matter for elected members to discuss. I suppose the whole I suppose, rationale behind was that you have, obviously, your DEAs that are performing a lot of very detailed work, Chairman, and it was really to try to improve the linkages and involve probably the community town partnership more at the thematic level, where those actions will be identified not just by the thematic groups but with the community town partners as well. So it's trying to, I suppose, improve the integration, Chairman, was really the rationale, because you have that structure right from your DEAs up, Chairman, so that's the background, but at the end of the day, it's a decision.
Just to, Chairman, also on that, again, it's a non-attendance of members. We're not getting any members attending it. Members, the view was we actually produced a sort of attendance list for members, which showed the attendance at the working groups over the last couple of years. PCSP is a statutory body, so it will continue. There was a number of members, but at the health and wellbeing, and I think the reflection being fed back at the party reps meeting was that members felt that their involvement into it really was, there was no involvement, but they really wanted some political cover. So the view was coming back is getting a member from each of the political parties to chair a number of them would actually, and rotating that would actually enable member engagement onto it in terms of for that. From an opposite point of view, you know, when we bring a number of statutory partners together in a room and you have a list of 10 members and we have one member attends or no members attending for the last 2 years, it's very hard to, you know, it doesn't do the council any good in terms of its own presentation to it. So I think it was to try and do that and to reflect the members. But certainly, the issue of cost isn't an issue. It's more in terms of the members want to be involved or they don't want to be involved. But we believe was a halfway house.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think that may be further clarified to me that then there'll be one person from each group in them who will be chairing, and that there's maybe the and that will retreat. Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor Byrne?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. It's on the same point as John was making. I disagree, but I know what you're saying about the attendance and the health and wellbeing thematic group of which I sit on. At the last meeting of us, I think there was six of us, six elected members there, but it was more focused. It was a meeting we were looking at for about an hour of the meeting about addiction and tackling addiction and actually projects that we can do in the community to hand out business cards and into all licenses and pointing people in direction services and stuff like that. The previous thematic group meetings, I completely agree with you. We went to one in Bagnall's Castle. It was way over my head. I mean, it was so overarching. You didn't know what you were talking about. And I spent more time asking what is the link between the DEAs, the thematic groups involved. And I think that was the confusing bit at the start. If it's like the voluntary members or the community members that come on to the DEAs, you just feel like everything's so above you that you nearly step back from it. I think going forward, if it is more focused, more talking about projects like the last health and wellbeing group, then it is absolutely imperative that there is political input in there as well. So I think going down to one member in each of the groups from 10 is too big of a jump. If there are changes going to be made to how these groups operate and they're going to be focused more solely on single projects, I think then it does need the input of the members. And if there has to be a change in going from 10 because the attendance is atrocious, then one from each party on each thematic group, and at least give political parties the chance to feed in to a forum that has stakeholders involved in it. Because what you get with the DEAs, we can discuss these things with the DEAs, but we're discussing them among ourselves, and you try to get a stakeholder from X, Y, and Z to come to the DEAs, it's next to impossible. You know, I know Barrett had said about 18 months ago to try and get roads to come. I mean, you have to send three or four invites before you can get an answer back. So I think we should have an option in the political parties in each of the thematic groups to be able to sit there and have conversations on specific projects with all the stakeholders present. So I back John's proposal, if he's going to make a proposal from the floor, that one from each political group have the opportunity to put a member on each thematic forum.
Okay, Councillor Walker.
Chair, thank you very much. And our party did discuss
this paper, and we have said that we would support the recommendations within it. One of the points that was raised on numerous occasions was attendance, and that, you know, people being asked to attend these things and they don't attend. Sometimes it's an embarrassment, so it is to council, and that when you have someone meeting or having a meeting and nobody turns up, it is an embarrassment. So in relation to the paper, we had said that we would support the recommendations contained within this document.
Mr. Carr. Yeah, thank you, Chair. I have to say, I was a bit concerned when I heard the recommendations as well. I hadn't attended a number of them, I'd not say it was that more, but there would be four or five, sometimes six councillors out of 10, maybe that sit on it. And the input was good, and the information flowing from it kept councillors in the loop a wee bit more. I have to say that if we're getting four or three or whatever it is, or poor attendance from 10 on the group, if you put one on it, it cuts it down an awful lot. Better chance that you're not going to have any representation from council on. I'm not sure that I've heard, apart from attendance. Attendance is not good. Okay, if we accept that, 10 people are invited, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 turn up. It's not that great a percentage, but council is being represented, democracy is being represented, and I have to say, I just cannot see the thinking behind this. You effectively, and will be accused of, taking councillors out of it. Keep it away from councillors. And I'm not sure that I agree with that at all. I think the status quo might be a better resolve. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor Rowan.
Yeah. I'll not rehash the arguments that have been made already, but I think what John has proposed seems sort of a sensible solution to it. It's managing that we're not too high in numbers on them, but at the same time it's giving them the representation across the council, so I would back that suggestion.
Okay. John, can you make a formal proposal, please?
Sorry, Chair, I'll make it a formal proposal then that we have one from each political group and then for the seven thematic working groups.
Chair, can I second that?
Okay. Yeah. Is that plus the alternating chair? Rotating chair?
Probably including then the alternating chair would come from the membership then of the thematic working group.
Yeah. But are you talking about rotating it on an annual basis or a meeting basis?
Chair, if you take it that the PCSP rotates on an annual basis, what you try and do is reflect that the chair is based on the legislation states the chair for the PCSP, so it'll be the biggest party, second biggest party, third biggest party, fourth biggest party. So what you do is if the biggest part, you just rotate that on that basis.
Sure. The only problem I have with that, there's five groups there that are associated with this idea. It means that in a 4-year term basis, four groups will get the chair, and the smallest group, which probably will be the independents, and the alliance will not get.
I don't think any of us can predict at this stage what the numbers are going to be. Yes.
We need to maybe chairman the issue is to agree in principle, and then we'll look at the detail prior to the annual meeting.
Are we happy to proceed on that basis? The proposer, Councillor Rami, sorry, is everybody in agreement, first of all?
Billy, I'm happy with that.
Sorry, Councillor Carr. Yes? Councillor Carr wants his concerns recorded. So, proposed by Councillor Trainor, seconded by Councillor. Sorry, Davy seconded, sorry. Apologies. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay, item 8, this is a governance arrangements 2019-2023. Liam, are you going to speak on this one?
Yeah, Chairman, just in preparation for the annual meeting, we've had a couple of meetings, discussions out of party reps. So we'll just pick up in terms of a couple of recommendations. Issue over standing orders, which is merely more procedure. The election mentions the month of May. Actually, that's Erstat and others mentions May. You can't, part of the legislation, have the annual meeting in May. It has to be in June. So it's all I'm doing is reflecting the legislation. And second thing is the Regional Technical Services Committee will no longer exist under the new council. It will become Neighbourhood Services. That reflects, if you go to a 41, and I'm getting into details here, a 41A challenge whereby there is a decision called in on the basis of procedure. It's at the chair of each of the committees and it names the committees. So if you have neighbourhood, somebody can make an argument or a legal argument, the Regular and Technical Services Committee doesn't exist. So therefore you need to have the Neighbourhood Services Committee. So it's really just putting the correct title onto it. Terms of reference for the committees are being amended to reflect a number of issues that really has come forward. First of all is the position of the Planning Committee. Is that as it stands at the moment, on a consultation, members will remember the Goongaloo wind farm, whereby the council considered it went to the planning committee, who then submitted the thing onto it. That sort of undermines the role of 41 councillors. Indeed, a planning committee could overrule the existing body of the council, so it's just reversing that decision. So the planning committee will agree the response to recommend to the council for approval. Also then, in terms of the planning protocol, the planning committee do work on the protocol, it should come straight to the council in terms of the planning protocol. So how the planning committee is run should be a decision for the planning committee members to recommend to council for approval, as opposed to having to go through a step through SPNR. And again, really looking at the organisation structure, planning, building control, and local development plan. Building control going through ERT, and the local development plan going to the planning committee, which is responsibility for the planning decisions going forward. One last issue that I'm recommending is also to is it's an issue discussed. I meant to bring it back to the party that we considered at one time before was the number of notice of motion. Certainly it's been mentioned to me a number of times, 3, 4, 5 notice of motion coming to councils that we should be looking maybe at considering. But again, that's entirely up to members if they want to look to restrict the number of notice of motion. So, Chairman, just there are the recommendations in preparation for the annual meeting. And again, it's the annual meeting will be on the 20th of May at 6 o'clock.
Okay. Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Two points. The amendments to the terms of reference, I know when I was clicking through and reading through, we had said before in SPNR that it should be clear what the changes are, if there are any changes in terms of reference. And I know with the planning, it's easy to pick up the changes there and neighbourhood services and the whole lot. But you've attached, or the officers have attached, the revised terms of reference with no notes on what has been changed. And I suppose as councillors, that's what we're keen to see. The revised terms are there, but...
Just, Chairman, 2.6 identifies what the changes are.
2.6 is... Yes, that's the point I'm making. 2.6 doesn't have any... It's written in the future... Yeah, planning committee. So, when you have updated the terms of reference of SPNR, it should be highlighted on this, because it's only highlighting the changes in ERT directorate, which is planning, and also in the neighbourhood services and that. So, I think... On the terms, here's the point I'm trying to make in a long-winded way. And the terms of reference from last term and this term, we had said at a previous meeting, I think Councillor Shavin had raised this on documents, if we could just get highlighted on the terms of reference that this is delaying or this section has changed, instead of just uploading the document again, it's easier for us to follow through.
Well, we can do that. That's the reason why it's been put in 2.6. So the changes to SPNR would be is no longer it, but the planning protocol would be taken out of it. So the changes... The recommendations in the report highlights where the changes are to the terms of reference.
Okay, point taken.
Chairman, happy to listen. We'll pick it up and get it done. So for the council meeting, that you'll see the changes on it.
Yeah, I think point taken. It was raised by a previous council, as I said. And when we get documents for changes, I flick through it to find a highlighted section. So that's the reason why I raised that point. The other point, as you can imagine, is the limiting the numbers of notice of motions at a council meeting. It's something I completely disagree with. I think following other council, the Belfast City Council, whatever, that's 5 times the amount of motions that we would have here. I don't think we'll ever inundate it with motions. We could have 3 to 4 maybe in a month. And at a time where, and I know notice of motions are things that are outside the council control, or we're given a direction on a certain issue, where it can't be dealt with through committees. And, you know, we're in a time now where you've got changes with Brexit, you've got no assembly and the whole lot. If councillors do want to take notice of motions in this on a certain time, it should never be limited. And then going forward and how to limit, you know, one from each party or two from each councillor over a certain period of time, I think it goes against everything but lack of transparency. And I am totally against limiting the numbers of motions. If we are sitting here till 11 o'clock at night with 10 motions every time, then fair enough, we can bring up that argument. That's never the case. So I agree with the recommendations 1 to 7, but taking out recommendation 5 is what I propose.
Again, Chairman, don't be packing with Councillor Burnham. It's really up for yourselves. All I'm doing, I'm throwing it on the agenda. It's not a recommendation. No.
Chairperson, I'd like to second the proposal made from Councillor Byrne there. I don't want to go too much over the details again, but it's especially around for me the notice of motion. The notice of motions, for the most part, whenever you look at some of the motions that came before this council that have been to do with issues that are outside of our control, you have issues regarding health. We've had most recently issues regarding the idea of the GDF. You know, these are things that we haven't got committees in place to deal with these issues, and we have to have an output for them. If you limit those notices of motion, well, essentially you're limiting our abilities as representatives. If we accept enough that you're going to do it, if we accept it, then we're going to limit ourselves to what we can actually achieve in this chamber. Each person, I have to say, I haven't been. A lot of you that are here today, you have been elected on a mandate. I'm hoping to do that in the coming future, you know. But, you know, you have been elected on a mandate to serve people. It's hard to serve people if you're limiting yourself from the get-go. So I would be on the same mind as Pete. I don't want to be limiting any sort of democracy here. I don't want to be limiting transparency. I think we should be totally transparent, and I think that, you know, allowing for the notice of motion to come forward is the right thing to do. So I'll just be supporting and seconding Pete's proposal there.
Councillor Bryan.
Yes, thanks, Chair. Yeah, very much echoing the sentiments of Councillors Byrne and Traynor there. I would be very concerned about the notice of motion having any sort of limit on it. Struggle to see where this proposal might have come from. I've certainly never heard any councillors complaining about the number we have, and as Councillor Byrne points out, you know, Belfast has many more. We are already quite good at dealing with motions that may fit within a particular committee remit better as well, where councillors who don't sit on that committee can come along, and I think, although that system might be frustrating at times when you've prepared a speech and so on, that does work okay in terms of making the system more efficient. So I think that's the only efficiency we really need there to continue what we're doing. And also, how would that system work? I mean, would it just be a case of first come, first serve, where you could potentially have all of the allocated notice of motion slots filled up the day after the last council meeting? I think that would be a complete mess. As John pointed out there, you know, that doesn't allow us to respond to emerging events. Well, obviously, we do have emergency motions, but, you know, events that would happen, you know, maybe halfway through the month that we'd want to put a motion in on, we wouldn't be able to respond and comment on. It could also be open to abuse by big parties, where, say, there were 5 allocated motion slots, then one party could take up all of those notices of motions to a member each, but also it disadvantages the smaller parties and the independents as well, who may not have the same clout of representation onto committees and so on. But motions, I know for myself and for other independents, motions are quite a good way for us to come along to the council meetings and say our bit. So I would be very worried about it from that point. So I would like to see that proposal removed.
Councillor Walker.
Sure, thank you very much. Yes, and in relation to the motions, I do know motions are taken first come, first serve. Whatever motion's in first will be first in the agenda when it comes to motions, and so on and so on. While motions are a great tool and it's good to get a debate going on certain issues, I think what we need to look at here is in relation to motions when they're coming forward. We have had numerous arguments in this chamber, so we have when motions has come forward, and the chair of council nitpicks what motions he's going to hear and what motions he's going to push to a committee. So we have now perfect example. I wasn't too happy when Councillor Enright's motion in relation to community funding was pushed to a committee and all the other motions was allowed to be heard that night. I don't think that's fair. So I do not think that's fair. I think there should be some sort of a system where there is a motion, and if it's relevant to the ERT or to the RATS committee, before it ever gets to council, the presenter of the motion is told that, look, that motion is going to the ERT, it will be dealt with there. If you're not on that committee, you can go along and speak to it. That means it will be dealt with quicker, because you're coming to full council. The council chairman has the prerogative to turn around and say, I'm sending that to the ERT committee, which means it's put back for another month. So there should be a structure in place where senior officials can turn around and say, well, that motion falls within that directive there. We send it to that committee. And I think it would work better, rather than having arguments in the chamber when they come forward and the chairman taking the decision which ones he's going to hear and which ones he's not. Now, there is ones that will come forward that will be heard, such as the chair here tonight, Councillor Savage, excellent motion in relation to housing. With Councillor Trainers at the last meeting in relation to nuclear waste, and that we have motions like that, we have health motions, them at full council, yes, but there is certain motions that can go to committees and they should be dealt with before they come to full council to stop the arguments over whose motion's been heard and whose has not been heard.
Just to clarify, I'm of the belief, Liam, that the standing orders does say
that. Yeah, it's 16.1 standing order. 16.16 says that if the subject matter of any motion of the notice which has been properly given comes to the remit of any committee, it shall, upon being moved and seconded, stand referred without discussion to that committee or any such committee, working group, or forum of the council to determine. But again, interpretation of standing orders is up to the chairman, so it's up to him to make that determination.
Okay. All right. The other system I was going to make is my belief that that was clear and cut in standing orders. I don't fully agree with what Billy's saying with regards to nitpicking, regardless of who the chairman is. I think all councillors should be aware when they're putting a motion in that if it can go to a committee, it should go to a committee. But if it's dealing with something outside of a committee, then they put it through. But it's up to the councillors at the end of the day. If you put something forward and it's kicked back to a committee, it's for good reason.
Are we all in agreement then, or is everybody in agreement with what was proposed that we that things set as they are?
And just all that recommendations, Chairman.
Are we happy with the other recommendations?
All recommendations bar five.
Bar the number, limiting the number of motions.
Yeah.
Are we all in agreement?
Okay.
Okay.
Chairman, just again, sorry, you guys probably don't want to hear, but for preparations for AGM, but I suppose we're probably looking at about two council meetings going forward to get a lot of this stuff agreed. So I'd rather get it in early in case there's any more debates around it. So one of the critical parts, and members will know, having come out of election, is you know, we need to start then making plan the business of the council in preparation for the AGM. The AGM must happen within 21 days of the date of election, so that's why we're in for the 20. We've pushed it out as far as we can, and in case there's any delays or adjournments at the meeting, I'd like to give myself a couple of days afterwards before we're into Wednesday is be the last day we can have the meeting. So what I wanted to do then was arrange some sort of a group of where I could bring representatives from each of the political parties or political party groups together to a council meeting. Just to be aware that members will know is that the legislation is quite specific in terms of each political party is designated under the Electoral Commission has a number of political parties. Where is an independent in a part of his own right. So we have three independents here, Councillor Henry, Councillor Tinley, Councillor Highland, and is that right? And I've got them all, three. And Henry, he was actually a political party. So they're on the basis of their political parties in the right, they're all individual parties. So where we are at the moment is we have party reps is set at the moment is whereby each of the political parties have a group. Henry attends as a UKIP and are the independent unionists, and all the other alliance and independents come together as one group and agree. Well, that is the would be an arrangement that came following the annual meeting. Prior to that, in the period between the election the last time and the annual meeting, the meeting was only held between any political party with three members plus came to the meeting. And I think at that point in time, any party which had 10 more had got two representatives at that point in time. So we initial meetings, we had two from Sinn Féin, two from the SDLP, one from the Ulster Unionists, one from the DUP, who sat and agreed the business arrangements coming up to the council meeting. So I suppose we had a discussion with the party reps, couldn't come to any consensus on it. It's critically important. I think we have three options in front of you. The issue is, I'm happy the third option is particularly difficult. It will mean maybe acting as a conduit between all the parties to try to get some agreement. And where we have got on lack of agreement, then really it's going to create problems for us at the annual meeting, because, and that's where you could be into a number of debates. So I'd like a bit of guidance and agreement here that following the annual meeting, when I call a party reps meeting, that I know who is going to be in them groupings. So, Chairman, it's with the members to agree what that should be. I'm also conscious that this is a small group, and so I think all parties are represented here. Yeah, okay. But I'm conscious again, you will have a number of independents who won't be here, who are individual parties.
Okay, Councillor Ryan.
Yeah, obviously, with a bit of a long discussion on this at the party reps meeting, and what I'd be proposing is a wee bit of a change to what I was arguing the idea. But the option one, which is to maintain the current membership on terms of reference. For the purpose of the first one or two meetings to get us ready for the AGM, and within that forum they then discuss how the party reps would then constitute themselves for the rest of the term of the new council. So I'd make that a proposal.
Mr. Willis.
I'll actually second that. So well, in relation to keeping option one there, status quo in relation to that there, and that, and then dealing with it in relation to the new mandate. How many reps and what reps are on?
Okay, Councillor Brown.
Yeah, thanks, Chair, and thanks to Councillor Ryan for that amendment. As an independent alliance grouping, we would be happy to accept that for those of us that are represented here only.
Okay, Councillor Brown.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I agree with keeping it as it is, the status quo for the period in Florida, but what I don't agree with going forward is how the party reps constitutes itself going forward. I think we should have a discussion with that afterwards, whether it's needed going forward. If that's what the proposal is, then, and it's going to come back at the start of the new term, whether what way it goes forward or what way it winds up.
Brought forward the AGM, it'll be up to the party reps then to make them suggestions. So we will agree all the governance structures at the annual meeting on the 20th of May.
Okay, look forward to that.
Okay, everybody in agreement? Okay. Item 10 is the proposed changes to registration of births, deaths, and marriages. Dorina.
Thank you, Chair. Councillors, you'll see in front of you tonight a paper which essentially proposes a change to the operational arrangements with regard to registration services. You'll note that Section 1.6, the GRO, which governs registration services, has been encouraging all councils to move to an appointment system. And in fact, the 10 other councils are now operating either an appointment-only system or a hybrid service. We see many advantages of moving to an appointment system. We largely out of respect to our customers sometimes in some difficult situations, but we also do see merit in ensuring that a drop-in service, if you like, remains available so that no one is to any detriment in that regard. So really, our recommendation of Section 3 is that from the 1st of May, we'll introduce a fixed appointment system but maintain that flexibility with regard to the public calling in, and similarly for our weddings, have a fixed time but again maintain some flexibility for special circumstances. So I'm seeking your approval for that recommendation tonight.
Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, I propose the recommendation. I think the staff that carry out these services are absolutely excellent. I think it's 5 years ago that I got married in Newry Down Hall, so Bartonshire and Kenny. and it was absolutely brilliant service. The one thing I did think when I was reading this, how on earth is it not an appointment system already? Who walks off the street and gets married without an appointment in any of these offices? I can understand when you're picking up a death certificate or that, but definitely for civil partnerships and marriages, I don't think there's any issue, and I don't think there's any issue by saying there's going to be two static times of 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. because, you know, the party's well started after that, so there's nobody going to be doing the paperwork for that. The one thing I do think we should be doing going forward by moving to this is not put an onus on promoting that it's a hybrid service, but phasing out the fact that it's a drop-in. Because when you tell people you can either make an appointment or you can drop in, and if there's a member of staff there, they will see you. You can rest assured they're going to just drop in. So I think the owner should be on an appointment, and if in the case they did drop in, there will be a accommodation. But I propose the paper. I think it's the best way going forward.
That's essentially what we're going to focus our promotional around the appointment system in the main, but we just don't want to disadvantage anyone. As you say, it's more on the registration of births and deaths that we don't want to turn anyone away should they drop in.
Yes, sir. Just a second, maybe the proposal there to go forward. A lot of logic put forward. Coming from an administrative background myself, you know, I can see how this is going to help staff. Certainly, and even the customers, as you pointed out, you know, many people are coming in maybe from the rurals. Anyone who lives maybe a substantial distance away from their closest registration office, you know, they're having to travel in. And a drop in, you know, there can be certain delays and certain waits. And to avoid that, having an appointment system is the best way forward. And as you say, if we have initially a hybrid system and then phasing out and having the appointment only system, which makes far better sense, and it then gives that bit of security then, that you actually have a time, you can come in, you can actually sell your affairs. So, happy to second that.
Okay, everybody happy to in agreement? Yep, okay, duly proposed. Okay. Item 11 is the replacement fencing at Windy Gap Pad. Burlow?
Thank you, Chair. This specific item arises in relation to replacement fencing at a public right-of-way known as Windy Gap Pad. In the former Bally Ward area of Banbridge District Council, which became the responsibility of this council, and which included five asserted public rights of way. This particular right of way has suffered damage to wooden fencing, which is required to be replaced at an estimated cost of not exceeding £5,000. This wouldn't be a regular type of application to this committee, but arises because of a specific agreement that's in place between Banbridge Council and the landowners in that area. So this council, as successor entitled to Banbridge for this area, is responsible for the continuation of that agreement and for the replacement of fencing, and approval is sought this evening for a recommendation that quotes for the work we obtained to replace the fencing.
Okay, maybe it blew down. Secret in the name, the Windy Gap. Okay, Mr. Rice.
I propose we accept the recommendation that the officers have made there. This is a very scenic part of rural County Down, and I think we should maintain the quality of the area that's been serviced. So I would recommend that the committee recommend this.
Professor Dorn.
Just a point of information on that. I just want to find out why is there any issue about the fencing up there? You know, rights away you have arguments over rights away at times, and I just noted in the document it was burnt down. What's the possibility that if it was replaced, was it burnt down antisocial behaviour? Is there a row with the right away?
I have no information, specific information on that, Councillor. I can't explain to what the cause was of fire.
Okay, because it's a long section of fence, and to see that it was burnt down.
It appear slightly unusual.
Okay, are we in agreement? Okay, thank you. Thanks for item 12 is for noting its key outcomes report sent by local government political partnership forum. And Dwayne is going to deal with that. Are you doing that, Dwayne?
Yeah, it's really just to bring it to your attention that the NILGA have issued it out, as you'll see, for as a fast update to all members. So really just drawing it to your attention, members, tonight.
Okay, any comments? Okay, duly noted. Okay, the next one's item 13.
Similarly, Chair, this is correspondence received from the Local Government Staff Commission. You know the story here, members, why there's a commitment to dissolve the Local Government Staff Commission without a functioning executive. The legislation to dissolve the commission cannot be put in place, so the commission continues to exist. What you'll see is that the chairman is writing to us to advise of a change of personnel and the two secondees coming out of an interchange trial process to essentially perform the duties until winding up stage. So it's really just to bring that to your attention.
So we're still called for the funding?
Yes, we still pay an annual funding amount to the Local Government Staff Commission, and we do still avail of some services from them.
Okay, any comments? Okay, duly noted. Sorry, Councillor Carr, do you want to come in?
Actually, it's just been that it's almost like a bit out of order. It was agreed by the Assembly in order to wrap it up, but sorry, it's not going to happen now because we don't have an Assembly. You carry on paying for it. Mm-hmm. And just on the back of that, too, I see that the Northern Ireland Fire and Rescue Service had appointed people to the board, and that was called into question because it wasn't the minister who signed off on them. You know, so you really got to question where some of these things are going. You know, mm-hmm. Is it right we should be supporting and paying for an organisation that is effectively redundant?
We are receiving some services. I know we have written in the past and expressed concern on this one. As the Local Government Staff Commission continues to exist, we have a statutory obligation to pay a contribution, all councils do, to it. So we are getting some services from them, but it's not a particularly ideal situation for anyone.
Well, okay, just a few. Well, it just appears to be harvesting to where we are at the minute politically, and not a lot of it makes sense. Okay, are we all happy for that to proceed? Okay, duly noted. Item number 14 is the Albert Basin Park. I believe, Conor, you're going to deal with it.
Thanks, Chair. This report tonight is for noting only, and it's to provide the members with an update on progress with the delivery of the Albert Basin Park. Following the June 18 meeting of the working group, it was recommended that officers procure the services of a specialist to update the existing contamination report. Council committee approval was obtained to carry out the review. The report was completed in December last year and concluded as set out below in the bullet points. I'll not go into the bullet points in detail, they're a bit technical, but I just thought it was a benefit to sort of provide the brief summary from the report. But in summary, considering the age of historic data and the nature of the proposed end use as a city park, WYG has identified a number of conceptual uncertainties, so there's gaps in what we have. And these need to be addressed to assess environmental risks associated with the site and the proposal. Council officers are proceeding with the delivery of the further site assessments as recommended, including intrusive investigations to update the land contamination risk assessment for the site. The works will be delivered from within the current approved budget. Scheme will commence in February and be completed within 6 months. And I have a commitment that this will be done by the end of June. A programme outlining the proposed delivery of the Albert Basin project has been appended for information. So a recommendation just that you note the progress of the working group and the proposed delivery programme is attached in Appendix 1. So happy to take any questions.
Any questions or comments? Yes, O'Brien.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Just to mention that when this further work is done, filling in the gaps, so to speak, can the report consider other locations where public amenity sites like a park have been built on a similar sort of land, sort of a case study kind of part of it? Would that be possible?
I think it's common in brownfield sites where the various land uses are proposed based on the level of contamination and the level of risk on the site. There is sites all across the country that have been used for various end uses. The Maze is one. You have Everington Barracks in Derry. You have Grosvenor Barracks in Enniskillen. You have where else. There's numerous locations across the country, but what will dictate will be the legislation and the exposure levels for the of the contamination that is identified within the risk. So land uses will be recommended based on the outcome of the report, and they may look at recommended land uses where there's minimal remediation required due to what we find. But there's numerous examples around the country where parks and open landscape areas have been developed on brownfield sites that were heavily contaminated.
I think also from the work that's been carried out, probably the most important page there is the draft program. We now have a timeline with actions in it. It's taken us a while to get there, sitting on the committee. But we have clarity now in relation to what's needed in relation to the topography of the site and the geology of the site. And what you'll see in that page that's there, it also highlights the consultation that will be done in relation to what people want to have on the site. So the two will effectively come together, whereby when we have the topography of the site, we know what elements people want in, where they can be actually placed. So, you know, it will all come together, and I would see certainly within the first 68 months here, starting to see progress. But I would like to thank Connor for the work that he's done, but also Connor Hawley, who has pulled things together very well over the last number of months, and we appear to be starting to make progress. It has been slow in the first year, I admit that, but we're now making progress. Any further comments? Okay. Duly noted. Okay. Item 15. This item is deemed to be exempt under paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act, Northern Ireland 2014. Information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information, and the public may, by resolution, be excluded during this item of business. The proposer, Councillor Burgess, going to committee. Seconder. Councillor Turner. Okay.
Okay, so whilst in closed session, the following matters were considered. Item 15, management accounts. It was agreed to note the contents of the officer's report showing the management accounts of council for the first 9 months of the 2018-19 financial year, comparing actual expenditure and revenue for the same period. Item 16, public right-of-way in Rough Island Road, Newry. It was agreed on the proposal of Councillor Traynor, seconded by Councillor Dornan, to instruct legal services to apply for an injunction against the landowner and refer the matter to the Newry DEA councillors for further consideration. Item 17, recruitment of Atlantic culture scapes. Agreed on the proposal of Councillor Byrne, seconded by Councillor Ryan, to recruit two new posts within the ERT Directorate to deliver Atlantic culture scape project as described in the application form from April 19 to March 2022. Item 18, Corrie Square Car Park. It was agreed on the proposal of Councillor Ruan, seconded by Councillor Byrne, to approve the request from Matt Darcy Company Limited to sublease the area of Corrie Square Car Park as marked in red in the officer's report from Europarks up to the 1st of November 2019. Item 19, Northern Ireland Public Services Ombudsman Complaint. It was agreed in the proposal of Councillor Walker, seconded by Councillor Byrne, to accept the recommendations contained within 1.1 of the officer's report, including the £100 conciliatory payment to the complainant. And item 20, D1 process regarding Raymond McCreesh Park. It was agreed on the proposal of Councillor Byrne, seconded by Councillor Walker, by way of a vote 6-4, 0 against, and with 5 abstentions, to confirm categorically that further consultation will take place with the community if any expressions of interest are received under the D1 process and before any further decision is made about whether to continue with disposal or not.